We are speaking with Andrea Davis, author and real estate professional. Andrea has practiced commercial real estate for over 20 years, and her breadth of knowledge stretches from developers to landlords to buyer-tenant representation and investments. Within the commercial real estate industry, Davis has won numerous awards. The Phoenix Business Journal ranked Andrea Davis as CRE in the top 10 ranking Arizona for the category of office brokerage. This is her first book in a series, with the second book coming out in 2020, and it's called Simplicity, Business Owner's Guide to Winning the Game of Commercial Real Estate Leasing. Andrea, thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you so much, Allison. It's a pleasure.
Well, we're excited to chat with you, and knowing that you've been a commercial realtor, obviously your career has taken you to quite a few places where you've built your knowledge, and your knowledge base has come to a point where you feel it's best to share kind of those commonly asked questions. So do you want to give us a little bit of background on your real estate career?
Absolutely. I started this from the ground up. I was actually waiting on a bunch of developers at a high-end restaurant, and one of them asked me if I wanted a job. I said yes, and I started as their executive assistant. So I learned from development sort of the opposite side of what most brokers learn, what goes into putting up an office building, a retail building, the whole leasing concept. And then when that company went back to Canada, I elected to stay on as and practice brokerage, commercial brokerage, and help tenants with their office and retail.
And you know, we're here in Park City. There's about 15,000 full-time residents in Park City. And I believe the number is about 1,500 active residential real estate brokers in our town. Give us an idea about commercial real estate. So you mentioned office space. What do commercial real estate professionals do, and how is that different than a residential real estate agent?
Well, it truly is two different worlds. In residential, they deal with homes, usually primary ownership homes, and they have formulas that they work with. So they have already pre-made contracts. Every single transaction that we do in commercial is totally different from A to Z. How do we find the location? How do I negotiate with the landlord? Everything is negotiable from the get-go. And it isn't until that lease or the lease is fully executed by both parties at the end of the day that you have a transaction, a deal, and the client has a new office.
So how long does a typical transaction like this take place? It's not kind of a something over the weekend. Are business transactions, you know, with commercial realtors, does a commercial transaction take longer than a residential purchase?
Well, my average commercial lease transaction has a six-month cycle. So first I need to meet with the client and understand what their business plan is, where their company is today, where it's going in the future, how do they utilize space, how do they use it. And then from there, we put together a plan. We search out properties that meet their parameters. We go out and tour them. Once we find the space, the real work actually starts. Then we start negotiating with a letter of intent back and forth with the property owner, the landlord. That may take 2 weeks. It depends on how big the company is. Then we go into, of course, if we can get those points hammered out, we go into a lease. That can be up to 40 pages long. So now we have attorneys involved in the process generally. And that can take up to 2 to 3 months to actually get the lease hammered out. So by the end of the day, and if we have tenant improvements to do and remodel the space for them, it can take up to 6 months from the time I meet the client until they actually move in.
So, you know, one of the challenges in your space, I mentioned residential space earlier, and one of the nice things in the residential space is the access to information is pretty easy, right? There's the MLS, you can look up and see what your neighbor has sold their home for. In your world, it's very opaque. It's really, really hard to get information. In fact, most of these leases that are being negotiated have a clause in there that says you, the tenant, are not allowed to talk about what the deal is we gave you. How do people get information so that they can see, you know, whether their deal is market and whether, you know, the terms that the landlord is asking for is reasonable?
Well, Doug, you're absolutely right on the money. None of this is public knowledge. None of the leases are public knowledge. The way that the tenant can most be protected is seek out good tenant representation, someone within their area that has done quite a few transactions, been in the industry for quite a few years. The learning curve for a new broker is probably up to 3 to 4 years. So you want someone that's seasoned or they have a good mentor. And they're the ones that are doing, if they're on the ground, they got boots on the ground and they're doing transactions, they know exactly what incentives are going to be offered, how much free rent they'll get up front, how much the landlord will possibly put out and tenant, and, you know, shell out for tenant improvements, will they get some free parking, all of those kind of things.
So you mentioned the first thing to do or the best thing to do is to find a professional, a broker. What are the costs of a broker? Is this something that, you know, is an excess cost that we need to budget for?
I love this question, Allison. And this is what really gets my goat, especially when tenants end up with a horrible lease because they didn't go out and find tenant representation. It costs them nothing, zero, zippo, nada, nothing. Because ironically, it's the landlord that pays for that tenant rep. Whether we are used or not, the landlord is still paying for the tenant representation.
Yeah, so that's a really important point. Why do you think that people try to do this on their own as opposed to having a professional? Do you think it's just the case that they don't, you know, when you buy a house, if you're looking to buy a house, you'd be foolish not to, for the same reason, you'd be foolish not to use a real estate agent because the person selling the house is glad to pay a commission to the person that brings them a potential buyer. And I think that knowledge is generally out there, and you don't see many people looking for a house without using a real estate agent. Why do you think so many people choose to go it alone when it comes to their commercial space?
Well, I think they just don't know that they have tenant representation is out there to work for them on their side, and that it doesn't cost them anything. Here's what happens. They need an office space. They drive down the road, and they say, oh, that's where I want to put my office. They take a sign call. They call up, and they don't realize that who they're talking to, the agent that they're talking to, is that represents the landlord and has the landlord's interest at heart, and they have a fiduciary duty to the landlord. So, therefore, they end up working for somebody, having somebody help them that's actually working for them.
Yeah, I have a friend that is a real estate attorney, and in fact, he helped open up the first 500 Blockbuster real estate locations.
Oh, yeah.
He left Blockbuster, went and did the same thing for Einstein Bagels. And the stories that he tells, you know, where landlords say, oh, we get this with all our leases, you know, they're going to want a percentage in retail space, which is what he's doing. It's not uncommon for the landlord to say, well, we get 1% of your revenues. Well, if you know, well, not only are you giving away 1% of your revenues, which when you think about it in retail, if you're making a 10% profit, you're fortunate. So you're giving away 10% of your profits, but you're also opening up your books to the landlord because he's got to be able to verify that. And he just would tell me these stories about, you know, what people think is standard and nothing is standard. You mentioned tenant improvements. So give us an idea of what some of the big dollars are. Obviously, it's the rent that you're going to pay. There's whether or not you're going to be paying for the utilities and everything else. But what are some of the big items that most people just don't realize are negotiable in a lease?
Well, ironically, it's the lease rate is the smallest one to negotiate. It's, like you say, the tenant improvement. So let's say if you're a doctor and an orthodontist, right now about $140 a square foot to build out. If I find a medical landlord for that tenant, that landlord already has kind of put in his budget that he'll pay $60 to $80 of that. And if he really likes that orthodontist, he might pay $100 a square foot or the whole thing if I can justify it with the length of the lease term. So that's number one. The other one are the hidden things like covered reserve parking. How much are they being charged for that? Are they the ones that have to maintain their air conditioning? What happens if those go out? All of those kinds of things.
You had mentioned an interesting piece in the book that I hadn't thought of, but I have run into it multiple times, and that's impact mortgage. Essentially, what you're agreeing to when you sign the contract versus when you expand and grow, and what was verbally talked about and written. Is that correct?
So you always want to make sure that what you agree to is in writing in the lease. Because if you don't agree, if it's not in the lease, the landlord can say, oh, it's not there, I'm not doing it. Whether it's your tenant, a certain finish for your cabinetry or the way the flooring is, there's nothing like if you think you're going to have this beautiful wood flooring and it doesn't get written in, the landlord, it's just there's a line item that the flooring is going to be done at $5 a square foot, and all of a sudden you end up with industrial carpet and you have a high-end clientele you're feeding through, that's horrible, right? But technically, the landlord only has to pay for what's in writing. Does that answer your question?
Yes, and I think in your book you gave an example of number of parking spaces within a parking lot that are allocated to maybe certain tenants or based upon use. And if your business starts becoming more successful, you can start to run into some issues.
Right. You're absolutely correct there. So the way cities and municipalities work, if once an office building gets built or warehouse or retail, there's a certain parking percentage that goes with this, an allocation. So for general office, it's probably 4 per 1,000. So if you have 10,000 square feet, you get 40 parking spaces, kind of theoretically allocated towards you. But if you're all of a sudden want to increase the density, your company grows, doubles, and you start putting 2 and 3 people in your office, and now you're up to 8 people in that office, now you're maxing out and putting a lot of pressure on the parking for all of the other tenants. And that's when a landlord will say, hey, we got a problem here. Either you got to do something with, how many people are parking here, or you're going to have to move. You're in default of moving.
I've seen a similar issue where the landlord has set certain kind of criteria of what that business does. And in this example, they were originally a ski rental business, but then they now started doing sales. And the landlord felt like it was in competition with another tenant. And so they could not expand their kind of capabilities as a business.
Yes, that happens quite often in retail. And that is because retail is the highest real estate, and it's the most costly because of location, and exposure. So the reason, the one trade-off that the landlord will give to their tenant, the retail tenant, for paying that higher rent, is they say, you're going to be the only one here. You're going to be the only ski shop. You're going to be the only hair salon. So that's kind of the trade-off. And if there is an exclusive in your lease or within that complex, then you have to live within those rights.
If you're just joining us, our guest today is Andrea Davis. She is the author of a book with the title Simplicity, A Business Owner's Guide to Winning the Game of Commercial Real Estate, with the subtitle First in a Series of Commercial Real Estate Negotiations. As Allison said, there's a new book, the second book, I imagine, in the series. KPCW is a radio station in Park City, and we're a town with a lot of small businesses and probably one of the more prevalent small businesses outside of retail would be restaurants. Changing your location if you're a restaurant is really a costly situation that people want to avoid. So, typical leases are 3 years, 5 years, maybe 10 years, hopefully with some options to renew. Talk to our audience about how they might be able to protect themselves so we couple weeks ago had in a local restaurateur from Nosh. He just got into his space. How does somebody like that that's starting their first restaurant protect themselves so if it goes really, really well, they can stay there for a long time with reasonable rents?
Well, like you said, Doug, it is catastrophic if a restaurant goes into the space, they don't have a long enough lease term and their business is doing great and all of a sudden they have to relocate. First of all, they may lose half of their clientele because they don't know where they are or they don't want to drive to this location. The best way to protect themselves is to have options to renew within their lease. And if they can do options to renew, so you might maybe say, I want 3 5-year options to renew if the business owner thinks that they want to be in that location and up and running for 20 years, let's say, and try to establish a rental increase within those options. Because a lot of times a landlord will say, well, I want it to be market rate when you renew your lease. Well, what happens? Let's look at the scenario. All of a sudden Nosh is doing great. They're knocking it out of the ballpark. There's lines around the block. Well, the landlord knows this. So when the lease comes up for renewal and it's going to be a market rate, instead of $20 a square foot, all of a sudden it might be $30 a square foot. The other thing is when your lease comes up for renewal, a lot of people don't know this, you do have the opportunity to renegotiate your lease. So my suggestion would be hire a local tenant rep that does that specific type of commercial leasing, which in this case it would be retail, and ask them what current market conditions are and have them help you renew the lease. Because even though the landlord thinks that they've got a captive audience and that you're not going to leave, the truth is it costs that landlord a lot of money to have you leave and re-tenant it and reposition it for a new tenant.
Okay, that's great advice. So your book, you wrote the book, and first off, both Alice and I, before the show, were reading your book, and we both commented about just how approachable the book is. It's kind of a complicated subject, but you make it very approachable, which is awesome. Is the idea of the book that people can do some of this on their own and they should read it so that they can become more informed, or is it really so that they can become a better client when they're working with a tenant rep broker?
I think the latter. I wrote it so that they would understand the process up front and to realize the importance of hiring a tenant rep. Because even if they understand and know the process and are very good at it, if they don't understand what current market conditions are for their area, they can never negotiate themselves the best deal. And they can't just ask the tenant next door or their best friend, because the tenant legally can't be telling a prospective neighbor what their rental rate is. And a lot of times they just don't tell you the truth. So you need that professional on your side. And again, it doesn't cost anything to have a tenant rep on your side.
No, that makes perfect sense. And as we've said, Simplicity, the book that you had written, really does take us through 11 steps to be able to get to the final point where we have a signed lease, we're doing tenant improvements, we're ready to move in. I want to thank Andrea Davis for joining us today, and thanks for being on Mountain Money.
Thank you so much. It really was a pleasure, Allison and Doug.